So it was late 2012, and I had just moved back to Budapest after working in Sweden. I worked at Wunderkraut Sweden, formerly known as Node One. And I was working in a co-working office. You know what a co-working office is? You know, it's basically, you go there, you have a table, you have coffee, internet, and you can work. That's how it is. And it's like a coffee shop, but you don't have to feel awkward if you don't buy a coffee every hour. So, and it's really nice for networking because there are other people there, and they often work in an IT-related field, and often they are not. And I met with two really nice people there, and they are my partners now, and Andras and Kata, they called. And we had a nice chat in the kitchen, and they approached me 2 weeks later with an idea for a product, which is a software product. And I've been approached many times before. You know, there is this random guy going to you, and they said, "Yeah, I have this idea. It might be a bigger hit than Facebook. You know, you want to join?" And well, when I hear that, I say, "Yeah, no. Good luck for that, and I'm not interested." But this was really different. This idea was realistic. It was great, and it made me excited. And it has the technical challenges, and I thought we could build something great together. So my life has really changed a lot since then. Now we are working together in an office, since then I switched companies. So now I work at Commerce Guys in the products team, working on Commerce Kickstart and Commerce Marketplace, and they were nice enough to let me to do my own things as well. So now it's a balance of working for Commerce Guys, and I'm doing this product development in my spare time. So just a few words about the product. This presentation is not really for demoing this product, but instead talk about my experience, what I learned. And this is the name of the product. It has to be pronounced Indiviso. And this is the logo that our really, really talented designer Balint made for us. And I'm really proud of this logo. And just a few words about this product. So this is a software for recruiters. I mentioned that I have two partners, and they are human resources specialists, and they know a lot about recruitment. And they come up with an idea for a software, and it eases the selection process, and it enforces to follow an approach that is kind of unique in the recruitment world, and I'm not going to bore you with that. I'm more than happy to talk about it later, but not during this presentation. And it implements video interview technology, so the interviews can be recorded, so it really helps the recruiters to find the best people. So I'd like to give you an outline of this talk. So first, I'd like to talk about the tools inside and outside of Drupal that I think are really useful in a product development project, and then how to use them, and then, of course, about the lessons I learned throughout this process. So we heard a lot about configuration management initiative for Drupal 8 in the past 2 days, and it's exciting, huh? So I am very excited as well. But in the meantime, we should not forget that we have really, really great and powerful tools today. So innovation is great, and I'm always excited about that. But when you are developing a product and you're involved in the business as well, you have to use the tools that you have today. And as I said, we have pretty great tools, and you can deliver value with them if you know what to use. So if you know me, you might have heard of my love for Page Manager and panels, and of course I would like to mention them as the first item on my list. And I just would like to give you an overview of how Page Manager works, and especially the plugin system, because that's the basic that you need to know if you want to use this amazing tool. So Page Manager is managing your layout and your content of your page. So the content has to come from some kind of object, and that's the context in the Page Manager word. So a context always wraps some kind of data, and you can use it in a standard way. And it usually comes from an argument, which is a piece in a URI. So imagine you have the node/node ID URI, and the node ID is the argument. So that defines what object to load from the database, for example, so that you can have your context, and then you can output whatever you want from that context. But that context can come from a relationship, which basically uses another context to load a new one. A common example is that you have a node object and you want to load a taxonomy object. So you can use a relationship to do that, and you will have the standard context available. And as I said, the context is used to output any kind of data, and the content type is what actually outputs the data. So it displays a particular piece of a context. And then you have the Access plugin, which implements access control for a particular piece of a data or a page or a page variant, etc. So you can find more info about the Page Manager plugins. So just check out my speaker deck profile, speakerdeck.com/balintk. And there's a presentation there, and you can find more details about that. So I also mentioned panels. So it's worth mentioning that panels also comes with two predefined plugin types, and one is the layout. So this is what controls what your page layout is. And then you have the style plugin, which controls how a pane looks. So the markup, the style. So for example, you want rounded corners for this pane, and so forth. And a pane is basically an instance of a content type. So a content type describes how to output something, and a pane is an instance that you put on a page. So just for the full picture, in my opinion, panels everywhere is also really handy. And if you enable that module, that means that basically you can forget the block system, and you can use this really powerful tool for outputting everything within your Drupal. So it's really a standardized way of working. I have to be honest here, I don't even know the Drupal 7 theme layer, because I never worked with it. I always use panels everywhere. And then you can do everything in the same way. So you don't have to memorize those crazy pre-process functions and all that. That's just my opinion. So I like to think about Page Manager like design patterns. You know, for design patterns, imagine that you wanna invite a friend, and you say that, hey, just come over. I'm gonna cook some pasta, and I put that and that and that into it. But it's actually really better if you say what kind of pasta you're cooking. You're cooking carbonara, for example, pasta carbonara. So your friend right away knows what he's going to eat, instead of really telling the details. So that's what a design pattern used for. It's just a standard way of calling things. And that's what Page Manager really does. It standardizes everything. So let's talk about the data models a bit. So in Drupal 7, we have a great entity API. And of course, it's going to be even better in Drupal 8, but it's already really useful in Drupal 7. So an entity is basically a discrete piece of data, and entities can have types, for example, node or user, and those types can have bundles. So for example, for nodes, the bundles are the content types. So for example, article, page, etc. And the entities, when you load an entity, of course, you would like to load the data with them, and that's what properties for. And properties are common across all entities in a given entity type, regardless of the bundle. And field API is another powerful way of storing data among the entities, because it's really a flexible way to attach data to your entities, and they are configurable per bundles and regardless of the entity type. So, but it's important to mention that this entity API is really only complete with the country module called entity API. So when you have these data models planned, entity reference is a really nice tool to define relationships between your entities. And then if you would like to list your entities, then you have views. Of course, everyone knows what views is. I think I've never done a Drupal project without rules. Views. Which is basically a query builder to list your entities. And if you have your entities list, and if you would like to perform any kind of actions, you can use views bug operations. So for example, you want to publish a few nodes at once, then you have views bug operations to help you to do that. And yeah, I already mentioned rules accidentally, but conditionally executed actions based on occurring events. That's what rules is. So you can configure different kind of actions based on different conditions, and it's really powerful. Drupal Commerce is actually built around rules, and it's a whole new dimension of abstraction, and it's really, really powerful. And then if you would like to allow your users to create and manage their own groups, and you want to encapsulate functionality, then you can use organic groups. And then the infamous features. I think we heard a lot about features during the config management talks. And features is there to export configurations. And you can complain a lot about features, but that's what we really have today. And we can actually live with it. If you understand how features works, and you really think about the problem, if it occurs, then it's solvable. You just need to respect the tool that we have today, because this is what we can use. So we cannot wait until 2014 until Drupal 8 ships. We have features today and we have to live with it. And it actually, you can get along if you think about the actual problem without, and yeah, instead of raging. So the list of Drupal modules that I wanted to mention ends here. And I'd like to talk about this tool called Aegir. And Aegir is a very powerful application, and it's actually built with Drupal. And it allows you to deploy and manage as many Drupal sites as you want. And it can be scaled across multiple server clusters, and it makes really easy to install, update, upgrade, and backup the entire network of Drupal sites. So it has the backend called Provision, and it has a really nice Drush interface. So it really helps you to fire up new Drupal sites just with a few clicks. And it's really powerful to use. But for that, you actually need to build an installation profile. That's what Aegir uses, and that's what I would recommend you to do anyway, even if you don't use Aegir. So installation profiles, when you install Drupal today, you can select between the standard and the minimal profiles. And if you implement your own profile, it actually acts like any other Drupal modules. You can define the dependencies, it has the same hooks running, and so on. And it wraps up the functionality of your site, and it eases the deployment because your site can be installed. And that's actually an industrial standard in software development. So, and it also supports testing. For example, if you use features, and you should use features, then you can, if you just reinstall the site, you can test the functionality that you have implemented. And it also supports the automated testing, because in your automated tests, you can just refer to your profile and tell your automated test to use this profile, and then you have all the functionality in place. And use DrushMake to build your code base. DrushMake, it's also an industrial standard to build the code base of your project. So you have a make file that describes all the external resources, and by external resources I mean contributed modules as well. And it really enforces that you do things right. You don't hack contrib modules, because then if you get an upgrade for a module, then you are in a really bad situation. So what you should do is always patching a module and post that patch to drupal.org if it's not already there. So, and in your makefile, you just download the contrib module and then you apply the patch with the makefile. And it's a good idea to use always a release of a module unless you really know what you're doing. And Aegir can also use a makefile. I've never tried it, but the functionality is there. So some tools outside of Drupal. So some front-end stuff. Bootstrap is a sleek, intuitive, and powerful front-end framework for faster and easier web development. That's what they say about it in the website. And that's actually really, really true. It's a killer prototyping tool because you have all the front-end pieces that you want to use in a project, and you can build really nice stuff already from the beginning with using Twitter Bootstrap. And in the end, it's really extendable, so you can think about it as a good start, and later on you can redesign it. That's what we are doing in our project. So yeah, I said Twitter Bootstrap. It was released as Twitter Bootstrap, I think 2 years ago. But then the guys who worked on Bootstrap, they wrote a blog post about 1 year ago, and they basically said that Twitter has nothing really to do with Bootstrap. They did it in their own time, and then they just released it. And yeah, they happened to work at Twitter. So I'm not gonna talk about more front-end stuff because I'm not really a front-end guy. So let's talk about deployment. So if you Google for this title here, the 7 deadly sins of software deployment, you can find a really nice OSCON talk from last month and maybe an article. And here's this nice poem. So why do you need deployment scripts? That's too much work to get done. I just run the steps by hand. I know I won't forget one. So yeah, you can easily think that, but that's actually not true. You will forget one. And you will do that when you're stressed and you really have to deploy a site really quickly, and then you don't have automatization, and yeah, you're in a big trouble basically. So in Drupal, basically automatization means running Drush Make to build the code base for you. That's the first step of the deployment. I'm talking about basic steps, of course. And then you would like to install the site, and then you might want to import a database dump to preserve the content and so on. It really depends on your project, but these are the most basic steps of it. And we have Jenkins for this job, which is an award-winning continuous integration application. So it can build and test your software project continuously. And it's really, really powerful. By the way, testing. There is another poem in this article that I mentioned. Need I no tests nor verification? Behold my code, kneel in adulation. So yes, you can think that you don't need tests, and that can actually work in some cases, doing a software project without testing. But you really want to make sure that your quality is stable in a software project. And in order to do that, you need automated testing. So writing tests is actually really intuitive in Drupal. It has simple test built in, and simple test supports unit testing and functional testing. And unit testing is a bit harder, but functional testing is actually really, really handy, and it's really easy to learn. And so if you haven't done it already, I really recommend you to invest some time to learn it. And I'd like to mention this tool, which I stumbled upon recently. It's called Huxley, and it was released 2 weeks ago. It was open sourced 2 weeks ago by Facebook. It was developed at Instagram. And it's a test-like system for catching visual regressions. And the idea is really, really simple. It watches you browsing, it takes screenshots, and then tells you when they change. So you can record what you're doing, and it uses the Selenium WebDriver. And once that is recorded, it replays it over and over, and it creates screenshots, and it compares the screenshots with the previous state. And it simply creates new screenshots, and they will be in your repository, so you can actually notice if something has changed. So it's a pretty simple idea, and I think it has so many use cases. So I haven't incorporated this into my own project, but I will definitely do that. It's on GitHub, so you can find it really easily. So, some lessons I learned. I am actually really aiming for perfectionism all the time. And I used to be the guy who really refined all his comments in the code, and I wanted it to look pretty all the time. You know, if there was no punctuation at the end of a comment, it felt like a catastrophe for me, because it has to be done in the right way. You know, everything has to be done in the right way. And of course, I mentioned that you need automated testing, so then you should do test-driven development. So I decided to do that in the project. So I started to implement tests first, and then the functionality. So and I ran the tests, and my code looked really pretty all the time, and it worked. And then suddenly 2 months have gone, and I haven't really delivered any real business value. I will talk about business value a bit later, but it was a really interesting lesson. So I love perfectionism, but I realized I can't really afford that, or can't afford it on that level which I chose before, because there is no time to do that. Especially in my situation, I have a full-time job, well, almost full-time, and I do this project in my free time. But I have to deliver, and I have to use my time wisely. So now my code actually is full of to-dos, which I need to do later. I really know that they are there, but I have to ship. And there's this cliche, you know, perfect is the enemy of done. And I'm sorry that I had to say this cliche, but it's so true. When you're in a situation that you have a potential client and you get the opportunity to do a demo for them. And actually, Balázs mentioned this morning that selling through a working demo is a key when it comes to sales. So you need a working solution. And for that, you need to ship. And you know, you can clean up your code later, but you're not gonna have another opportunity to do a demo for a client who is really, you know, a serious client. And of course, it's really nice when your code is really, really well documented and everything looks really great. But in the end, your customer doesn't care. They don't care about your code quality. And I'm not saying that code quality is not important. I'm saying that it's really important to find a balance and that you ship and ship and ship. So in a software project, or actually in any project, there are these two angles, effectiveness and efficiency. So I was thinking about the meaning of this word, and many of you are Hungarians here, so just try to translate it to Hungarian. It's really hard to actually see the difference, and I know it's the same with Swedish. I don't know other speakers what you know about this, but it's really hard to actually see the difference between these two terms. But efficiency means doing things right. And effectiveness means doing the right things. And what you want to do is stay in the between. You want to do things right, and you want to do the right things. So you always have to deliver business value. And there's this formula. Business value equals benefit per time. And it's just simple math. If you would like to increase the business value, then you have to increase the benefit and not touching the time. Or you have to decrease the time, not touching the benefit. Or you can decrease the benefit, but then you have to decrease the time even more. Or you can increase the time, but then you have to increase the benefit even more. So that's just this simple. And you always have to think about business value. As I said, your customer doesn't care if your feature is not overridden. They care about the actual feature. And you have to prioritize all the time, because you're not gonna have time to do everything, all of your crazy ideas. Of course, coming up with ideas is really, really easy. But actually shipping them is what's hard. And I saw a talk of Seth Godin recently, and what he said is yeah, I mean, being creative is easy. And what you do for a living is not being creative. What you do is shipping. That's what you do for a living. So you always have to prioritize. And let's see two angles here as well. So these are your ideas. And you can just categorize them if they are really small, medium, large, or very large. And then you have the other angle, and then you have the business value there. And every time when you think about a feature or an idea, you have to place it somewhere. So let's say you have an idea for a feature, and that's actually a large task. You need a lot of efforts to implement it. But it has pretty small business value, so you put it there. Then you have an even bigger task, but it actually has a lot of business value, so you put it there. Then let's place two more, a very small task with medium business value, medium sized, and then another small task with a really big one, really big business value. So now you can prioritize. So the first one is obviously the smallest one. You want to start with the smallest one because when you start with a small task, it keeps you in the flow, or actually it puts you in the flow if you're doing it right. And this task here has a relatively good business value, so let's start with that. So the next one obviously is the small task, which is a little bit bigger than the previous one, but it has even more business value in it. And then you have this very big one, and it also has a lot of potential in it when it comes to business value. So let's do that third, and then finally the last one. So this is really handy for prioritization. I use this tool a lot. Another topic which I would like to talk about. So I often feel like this. So as a programmer, it's easy to be paralyzed with lack of confidence in your skills. But instead, what you should do, solve problems, add value, and keep learning. So I have worked, and I am working with such great programmers, and sometimes I feel like, oh my God, I'm nothing compared to these guys because they are so competent. They know so many things inside and outside of Drupal, and I feel like small, you know. But in the end, what matters is that I can also solve problems, I can add value, I can deliver value, and of course I'm constantly learning. That's why I'm a programmer, and that's what you should think about yourself. And when you start a project like this, of course there are a lot of fears inside you. How am I gonna manage it? I have another full-time job. I'm gonna be exhausted. I'm gonna deal with burnout, and it's just really scary. But what really scares you is your lizard brain inside your head. So think about a chicken. A chicken has a lizard brain, and the lizard brain, what it can do is it's always hungry, it's scared, it's angry, and horny. The lizard brain only wants food, wants to survive, and wants to be safe. And it turns out that we also have a lizard brain, and it affects our decisions. That's what really makes us feel scared when it comes to starting something new. Kulch is looking at me. He is a psychologist, so I'm really afraid of what I'm saying right now. But you see, that's the lizard brain. There is another guy in this room who has way more knowledge about this topic than me, and I'm talking about this, and you know, I'm scared. And that's the lizard brain, and that's what you need to control, because you know, there was this thing called evolution, and then we have new layers in our brain, and yeah, the lizard brain is there, but we can control it, and it's really hard in the beginning. There is this balloon here, and I would like to blow up this balloon, and you know, it's hard to blow up a balloon. I'm gonna embarrass myself because in the beginning I'm gonna have this really weird face, struggling with the breath, because the few first breath are really hard. So but after the first few breath, it just gets easier, and it's actually a downhill from there. But you need to keep the breath flowing. And then in the end, you have it. You did it, and it was just hard from the beginning, and that's it. It's irrelevant what you think you can do. What really matters is what you're doing. So thank you for your attention. So do you have any questions? Could you please?
Close up.
Yeah. Any questions?
Hi, thank you for this nice presentation. Let's go back.
So thank you for this nice presentation. We learned a lot. I would like to ask something technical regarding, you mentioned that your workflow is the following, that when you hack or modify a contrib module, you always post the patch to drupal.org because of the makefile. But what if this modification is special to your project? So you can't control it. You can't version control if you don't post it to drupal.org.
So you're saying that you have a contrib module and you want to modify it in a way which is really special for your project? Yeah, I understand. So, of course, you need to consider doing a really abstract thing and work on the contrib module itself and make it work with your use case. But that can be a lot of work, I know. So, usually there is a workaround for these situations that you can do, but I didn't always use contrib modules for any kind of task in this project. So, of course, you have to decide and you have to think about that formula I showed you, and you have to think about the time. So yeah, does it worth it? Does it worth to make it so abstract, so general, so others can use it, and I can post it to Drupal.org? And of course, I'm gonna have a lot of karma, but in the end, your customer will not give you karma for it. And you know, find the balance. It's a trade-off. So either you actually contribute it back, but then it might make your customer not really happy because the new feature didn't get delivered. Yeah, it's a really hard situation, and it's for me it was especially hard to decide these kind of things because I'm a developer. Of course, I want to contribute it back. I want to make it awesome and gain karma for it. But I'm also involved in the business, so it's extremely hard to decide. And I think it's always up to you.
Thanks also for the presentation, very exciting ideas. One specific question about Huxley. I'm not sure if you tried out in an advanced way, because I already use Selenium and I always have a bunch of series of screenshots in different phases, but how smart is the comparing? Because I could compare in a dumb way, but so I'm wondering if it's much better what I have now, something very neat from Facebook, or just a dumb comparison.
It's just dumb. It actually it compares them, and if it changes in any way, it doesn't even show you a warning because it might be natural. You know, you might have just added a new feature to your project and a new button appeared somewhere, and it's natural. So it just replays your path of browsing, and then it creates the new screenshots, and then in the QA phase, in the quality assurance phase, you have to decide if it's natural that something has changed or it's actually an error. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, it's not really smart, but it's, I think it's freaking smart in a way, like it's so simple and really simple to set up, and you can use it however it fits for your workflow. And they actually say it on the project page. I really liked it, because for example, the simple test community can be really, really like, yeah, you have to do things like this and that. It's almost like following these rules, and if you don't do that, then you are an idiot. But in the Huxley project, they don't want to tell you how to use it. They just say, yeah, here is what it can do, and yeah, use it in your project however it fits. So I really like that. All right, thank you again.